Ephesians chapter 5 is where we are. We'll be there for a couple of weeks, a couple more weeks together. We're looking at roles, men and women, and our roles, our differences, our likenesses, our stance before God, all these things. We've been spending the past two Sundays doing, according to my sermon title here, putting men in their place is my philosophy. Not philosophy, I think I can easily prove it scripturally, that if men will do what they're supposed to do, that the chances of a family going well increase, not just 50%, but about 80%. About 80% of the problem has to do with leadership. Anytime an organization doesn't go correctly, a lot of the blame can come to the leadership, but it is the leadership that is responsible, and the same is true with the organization called family. That organization is dependent upon the leadership, and when men who are supposed to be the leaders don't lead correctly or don't lead at all, then we have huge problems. And remember what leadership is. Leadership on the stage of life, if you will, the illustration I used of sending our little kids up here on the stage to do a children's program, the leader of the group is the first one on the stage. If he or she does not hit her ex or his ex on the stage, then the whole bunch of them are going to be all fouled up. And that's the same as is true within the family. If the man does not hit his ex on the stage, then the whole bunch gets fouled up. And so we're going to be spending a whole lot more time on men than we are on ladies or anybody else, just simply because I think if you take care of the leadership, then you'll take care of the followership. It just all goes together. There's an Australian man by the name of Ian Usher who, being disappointed with his current life, decided that he would sell it on eBay, his life. In fact, the bid started, interestingly enough, this past Sunday, and the bid is up this Sunday if you care to go home and bid on it. It's on the internet, as I understand. Today, the bid is up. He's selling his life for the sum total of $390,000. You ask, what's a life worth? Well, for him, $390 is the number. Along with that $390, you get a furnished three-bedroom home in Australia. You get a car, you get a motorcycle, and you get a jet ski. He's even throwing in a one-time introduction to all of his friends. And a two-week stint at his job to see if you might want to work there or if things might work out there. And he also has an agreement. This is in agreement with his friends and with his employer also. And this is no hoax. I mean, it's actually up for bid today. Ian Usher, dissatisfied with his life, putting it up for bid. He says, when it sells and when everything closes and finalizes, his plan is, after spending a couple of days with his mother, he's going to take his passport. He intends to only own a passport and a wallet and go down to the airport and make a decision about where he's going to start his life over again. Crazy, isn't it? You've heard the phrase, turn over a new leaf. That's like turn over a new tree, you know, find another tree, you know, altogether. Interesting. People dissatisfied with their lives and wanting a change, and in some cases definitely needing a change. And we've been looking at the change that we need to take place these past couple of Sundays as men, the change that needs to take place in our lives and with regards to responsibility and who we are supposed to be. And we saw that when it comes to male role models in the world, there are two extremes that we need to avoid. Asking the question, what does biblical manhood look like? The two extremes, one being the politically correct position, which is the position that says there is no difference between men and women. They're totally interchangeable. It's not necessary to have a man in the home. It's not necessary for men to lead. It's not necessary for all these things. It's totally politically correct, but totally, completely killing us as a culture and as a people. And as families, it's murdering us. It's slaying us. We don't know what to do. The problem with that is that it's that culture in which our boys are being raised in. It's that culture in which I was raised in. It's that culture in which pretty much everybody below the age of 55 was raised in. That idea, we've been baptized into it. And so to get this politically correct understanding out of our minds is going to be hard to do. The other extreme, which is also many of us have been baptized into, is the one that I call the pseudo-Christian position, which actually has nothing to do with the Bible. It's simply us reflecting our culture and the society, the patriarchal society that we at least used to be here in this nation. The traditional role where men played little kings and little tyrants of their homes. Familiar with that role? Where their mind was the only mind and their voice was the only voice and their opinion was the only opinion and they were abusive and dominant and answered to no one. That is also equally unbiblical, not any better than the current position which we're in, which is, as I said, the politically correct position. Neither are a biblical position. So what does God say? What is a real man? And how do we become one? Well, we saw last time the first two steps in becoming a real man. Number one is this understanding in Ephesians chapter 5. Did I tell you to turn there? Ephesians, I'm kind of disoriented. My air conditioner's been out for 4 days, and it's been 90 degrees in my house. So I'm a little bit, not clear-headed. So Ephesians chapter 5, verse 21 is where we were last time, and we're going to be down below that. But we saw in verse 21 there this whole issue of mutual submission, mutual subjection. And this is the mindset that we have to come into with every single relationship, most especially the marriage relationship. Mutual submission. Remember the illustration I gave you last time. Marriage is like a dance. Relationship between a husband and wife is like a dance. The issue is not who leads. The issue is, do you dance well together? Do you dance well? If there's no room within the dance for male chauvinism on the one hand or female manipulation on the other, because if you do, you're both going to look like fools on the dance floor. Bottom line. If you're going to be selfish and interested in getting yours, I just want mine and I don't care about anybody else, whether that's your overt idea or understanding or it's your covert, it's just who you are in your heart, you're going to mess the whole thing up. And that's what's happening. That's what's happening. We want to point our finger and say it's her fault or it's his fault. Listen, guys, you're in this together. You fall down on the dance floor, both of you are going to be laughed at. That's just the way it is. So there's no room for that kind of stuff. But also understanding within mutual submission and within this dance, the second thing for us men is to understand that someone in a dance does have to lead. It's not been left up to us to decide who that is. God has designated that the man in the marriage relationship is the leader. He may not be the best qualified. He certainly isn't, according to our culture, because our culture is not qualified. Honest to goodness, men, the average man today, ladies, girls, ain't worth marrying. He's not. I'm sorry. He's not worth it. He doesn't have it. I'm saying intrinsically, yes, he is. But his culture and his role models have turned him into something that is not worth it. It's not worth it. We need to be retrained. A retrained man, according to biblical principles, is definitely a man worth marrying. We're going to see that this morning. We're going to see that kind of thing takes place. So number one, mutual submission. Number two, within mutual submission, the man has been chosen by God to lead. So what does that leadership look like? Well, we've been asking that question. The problem that it is we've asked that question of our culture and not of our God. See, our God is the one who says that we are to be leaders. He's the one that says so, guys. So we need to go to him because he's also the one that says, how so? To say, okay, God says I'm the leader, and then go to our culture for the answers to the questions of how do I be a leader is what messing stuff up. Since he says so, then he says also how so. And so we got to go to him to find that information, and that's why we're going here to the Scriptures. Ephesians chapter 5. Look down at beginning with verse 25. The husband's position in the marriage and the husband's position within the family. We need to hear this. We really need to hear this, guys. Verse 25 says, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for it. So number one, understand that our leadership model is not of this world. Our leadership model is none other than God's Son, Jesus Christ. He is the model of our leadership. He is the person that we model our leadership, that we change, that we mold our leadership to look just like him. How? The big question is, how does he lead? Well, we're not given that. We're not left up to just decide. It's given to us here. But that is the question we need to ask. When I say I am the leader, then I need to say, how does Christ lead? the church, because that is exactly the way I'm to lead my wife and I'm to lead my family. That's my responsibility. You understand the role of men. When we're talking about roles and men and women, people get all huffy. You know, there are no roles, and that's a totally politically correct position. As I said, it's murdering us. It's killing our culture. There are definitely roles. Men and women are definitely not the same. As I said last time, I can't imagine a thinking person who has either been married or had children of both sexes to say that women and men are the same. Give me a break. And the least of our differences, the least, is our physical differences. We're hardwired completely different. So we have to understand, we're completely equals, yes. Different, most definitely. In those differences, in the roles, let's say, again, the play of life, if you have option of two roles, one being the church and the other one being Christ, which role would you choose? Which one's easier to play? The church gets to live, right? What does Jesus get to do? You know, before the play's over, you get to get hung on a cross. That's not going to be any fun. Guys, listen, that is your role. You're not given an option. The men have the tougher role. This whole issue of submission, you know, to your husband, all that kind of stuff is big, you know, raises huge issues and big things among Christian culture. I'm telling you, ladies, you got it easy. You look at what the man has to do. He is playing the role. He has to position himself in the role of Christ. I'm telling you, Christ has the tougher road to hoe, definitely, in that relationship. So pay careful attention to what this says. And notice what else he says here. Our role model is Christ, and he says we are to love our wives as Christ loved the church. Now there's lots of words in the Greek language for love. There's about four or five. He could have chosen any one of those words, but the word that Paul chose here to explain Christ's love for the church and our love for our wives is the word agape. God's kind of love. Unconditional love. He could have chosen lots of words, but the word is God's kind of love. Agape love. Verse 26. Gave himself up for it, says in verse 25, that he might sanctify it, that is the church, having cleansed it by the washing of the water with the word. That he might sanctify it, or other, some of your translations probably say, make her holy. That word literally means to make something or someone special or elevate someone. So simply put, guys, your job toward your wife is to make her special and elevate her. That is your job. That is your role. That is your position in the church. In the church, yes, but definitely in the family. That is your position. To elevate her, to make her special. This is where you lead her. How do I lead? What do I do? Where do I go? Well, simply put, you're to lead her to a place where she is special and elevated. That's your job. Example being Christ. Verse 27. Your job's not over. Cleansing her by the washing with the water with the word, that he might present the church to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. And the part I want to focus on there is where it says present. That word literally means in the Greek, place alongside himself. That he might place the church alongside of himself. How high did he elevate? He elevated the church to equal standing, listen to me, to equal standing with him before God, before the Father. Equal standing with him. Now, are we equal to Christ? No, we'll never be Jesus in that sense. I mean, he's Jesus. We'll never be in his role, right? We're the church. We don't do his role. He's Jesus. We're the church. But he has elevated us to equal standing before the Father. In other words, as a Christian, as a believer in Jesus Christ, you are as accepted in heaven as Jesus Christ. You are as welcome in heaven as Jesus Christ. You're as loved by the Father as Jesus Christ. He elevated us to a position of equal acceptance. Now, guys, that's fun and good for all of us being Christians, but now you understand that is your role toward your wife. You understand the problem, the reason why we had this whole feminist revolution the past 30, 40 years? It's because we weren't doing that. Why did they have to stand up and say, when we do equal job and equal work, and then we got to come home and do all the work while you sit in the lounger? Why do you think they raised their hands and said, no more? Because we weren't doing their job. They shouldn't have to fight to be on equal standing with us. That is our job, guys. And we fell down. And thus the reason. We point our fingers at these feminists, and I'm not trying to remove the blame from this crazy stuff that's going on out there, but to be honest to goodness truth, it started with us. Because we were not elevating our wives. We were not putting them in a position of equal standing. They were doing equal work, or more so. But they were not, and then who was getting all the credit? You see? That'd make anybody mad, would it not? Anybody's fist clenched, would it not? It's not amazing at all that things are the way they are. Not at all. Again, the blame comes to the feet of leadership. Verse 28. Even so, he says, ought husbands, howso? As Christ does. Even so ought husbands to love their own wives as their own bodies. He that loves his wife loves himself. Now, if we could do this, at least in theory, you cut the divorce rate right in half immediately. Every man did this. Now, that's to say if 50% is her blame. Now, who knows if it is. But if guys would love their wives as their own bodies, you don't do things. I mean, you take care of yourself, don't you? You want what's right for yourself. You constantly are. It's second nature to take care of your own body, is it not? It ought to be the same for your wife. You ought to be caring for her in that way. As I said, cut divorce rate right clean in half. Verse 29. For no man ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it, even as Christ also does the church. That's our call. You understand, Christ's provision for the church is more than just physical needs. Likewise, your provision for your wife is more than just physical needs. Oh, well, I got a good job and I bring home good money. Well, that's good. And you should do that. And you should feel the weight of that responsibility. But your responsibility is bigger than that. What does Christ not supply for the church? He provides for her physically, spiritually, and emotionally. That's your job for your wife. You say, well, that's a tall order. Yeah, you bet it is. Think of it this way. We're job-oriented in our mindset, are we not, as men? What if your paying job every single day that you got up every day, drank your coffee, ate your breakfast, and went to the office for, your paying job every single day was to see to it that one single person on this planet was provided for physically, emotionally, and spiritually? What would you do? You set out a list of 1, 2, 3, A, B, C, the stuff I got to get done today in order to accomplish that job. Listen, that is your job as a husband. And the person that you've been hired, if you will, to take care of is your wife. Providing for her physically, spiritually, and emotionally. It is your responsibility. It is your responsibility. As Christ did for the church, so we are to do for our wives. Male leadership, listen, means simply assuming responsibility more than anything else. Assuming responsibility. Oh, I'm a responsible person. Oh, I don't doubt that. I'm confident that you are at work, and I'm confident that you are in the community, but are you responsible at home? That's the big question here. That's the issue. Are you responsible at home? Listen, guys. Men are to assume the same kind of responsibility for their wives that Christ does for the church. And let it sink in. Again, guys, we are to be responsible for our wives and families the same way Jesus is responsible for the church. You see, you throw out all this baloney about I'm the leader. Like I said, if you got to say that you're the leader, you're not the leader. If you have to say it, then you're not it. Throw out this whole baloney about I'm the leader. Yeah, you're the leader. You know why you're the leader? It's a secondary consequence of the fact that you're responsible. You are responsible, guys. You are. God comes to you. Listen. God comes to you and he hands you the lives of your wife and your children, and he says to you, you are responsible for them. That is biblical manhood. You are responsible for them. And if that doesn't scare you, you're not awake. The role that we are to play is the toughest role in the family. And no, we are not adequate for it. But we are in Christ. And we are in the Holy Spirit. You understand all these roles and all these things and all the family that God describes here, they're all just ideals if we are not following him. If we are not submitted in our dance to the Lord of the dance and who choreographs everything, then all this stuff is just a bunch of stuff that people talk about and nobody does. It is under the authority and power of the Holy Spirit that we're able to do this, and only under that authority. So first place is we've got to submit ourselves to Christ. And then we submit ourselves to the role that God has given us in our families. I'm going to conclude this morning by giving you five diagnostic questions, guys, to find out, and ladies, to find out who is assuming responsibility in your home. Well, these are just down to the brass tacks. You know, we talk about responsibility, and our responsibility needs to reflect the responsibility that Christ takes for the church, and yes, that's all good, but let's get down to the brass tacks of who is actually assuming responsibility. Remember, you are the head, but you now may not be, guys, you may not be the acting head. You are the head because God has said that you are, but you not be acting as such. These diagnostic questions are intended to find out that question one way or the other. And again, these questions are not to make you feel bad, although they might. Okay? And ladies, this is not the chance for you to elbow him in the ribs. Okay? Because chances are he has never seen this before. He is the role, what he is doing is exactly the way he was raised. And exactly the way he was taught, and exactly what he's seen in his culture, and exactly what's been shoved down his throat. So it's not easy. It's not like, oh, well, he knows what to do, but he's just not doing it. No, I'm telling you. The average guy out there doesn't know. They haven't a clue. Never heard this stuff before. They're doing what they think they should be doing. In fact, they like where they are, which is in a position of no responsibility. Five diagnostic questions. Number one. Diagnostic question to see who's assuming responsibility. Who initiates spiritual growth in your home? Who initiates spiritual growth in your home? Who is the one that pushes for prayer, pushes for Bible study? Who is the one that says, no, we're going to do it right, we're going to do it God's way in this house? Who is that one? Who is that one? Again, these are definitely rhetorical questions. Don't say my wife or my husband, please. I want you to answer that question in your head. Who initiates spiritual growth in your home? Number two, who handles the money in your home? Who handles the money in your home? And I don't mean necessarily who balances the checkbook, that kind of thing. She may be much better with books and much better than numbers than you are. You probably should let her do it, right? What I mean is, who holds the moral weight of the financial situation in your home? Who shoulders it? Who carries it? Who is the one who asks the ultimate questions of how much do we have and how much are we able to spend? Who's the one? Who's the one that feels the weight? Again, we're not looking for one who says they're the leader. We're looking for the one who is actually assuming responsibility. So number two, who handles the money in your home? Number three, who disciplines the children when both of you are at home? Well, these are tough personal questions, and I apologize if I make you feel bad, but you know that's what church is all about. You know, you scram around, you wish the preacher would quit. You know, why can't we sing another song? Surely he's got no more questions like this. This is a diagnostic question of who is assuming responsibility. It's a diagnostic question. Who handles the discipline when both of you are at the house? Kids are upstairs tearing the place up. Who's the one that takes care of stuff? Who's the one that they have to answer to? Who's the one? Therefore, who's the one assuming responsibility for the kids? Number four, who initiates talking about problems, about the future, about plans, etc. Who's that one in your home? Who's the one who initiates talking about problems, the future, plans, other things like that? Who's the one? Who's the one that feels the moral weight of those things? Because that's the one that's bringing up the conversation. And number five, thank goodness you know we're at the end here, huh? Number five, diagnostic question to see who's assuming responsibility in your home. Number five, who asks the most diagnostic questions about the family, the house, the finances, other things? Again, we're coming at it with five different questions, but we're coming at the same thing. Who's the one that asks diagnostic questions about how things are really going? How are things really happening? What's the real status quo here? What's the real issues? What are we really dealing with? What is reality in our house, in our home, in our family? What is reality for us? Who's the one that's asking those questions most of the time? Who's that person? Again, not that your wife is not allowed to be concerned about these things, or not that you shouldn't be concerned about these things, ladies, and not that you can't do some of these things and be responsible for them. But I'm looking for who shoulders the moral weight. Here's the thing, here's the ultimate answer to these diagnostic questions. If your wife, guys, is doing four or five of the five of these things, then guess what? You ain't the leader. You're not. You may say that you're the leader, but you're not. Because she is assuming responsibility. She is shouldering responsibility. You can say whatever you want. Again, if you have to say you're the leader, then you're probably not. But if your guy on the one hand is saying, I'm the leader, but the lady's saying on the other hand, but I'm the one that's responsible, she's the leader. She is. She's the acting head. And also, guys, if your wife is handling all this responsibility, then you can add one more to her number of children. You know what I mean? One more. If she's got two, let me tell you something, she's got three, and you're the third. She's got four, then you're the fifth. I'm telling you. If she's doing all this responsibility, then she is both husband and wife in that home. And she's got more than one, she's got one more kid than she thought she had, and maybe she already knew it. Responsibility is the pinnacle, is the example, is the full understanding of what it means to be a leader. It's not that you call all the shots, and it's certainly not that you know everything. But it is when things go wrong, you understand, when God hands you your wife, the life of your wife and of your family, and He says, you're responsible for them. So when stuff goes wrong with them, who's He going to look for? You. Adam and Eve in the garden, Eve sins, remember? And then she gets Adam to sin. And who does God come looking for? Well, it's not fair, is it? Why would He come looking for the man? She was the one. In fact, Adam tried to instruct God. No, it was the woman that you gave me. Did God even flinch at that? No, He came looking for the man. Why? Because He's the head. He's responsible. If it all goes south, He's still responsible. Now again, she's got her own mind, and she can make her own decisions, and I understand that, and she certainly, definitely, and you want her to be that way in every way. But you understand, you've got to make sure you're in every way doing your part so that you can answer to God for that, because believe me, you will. You think about it. Marriage relationship is supposed to be a romantic relationship. Unlike any other relationship on this planet, it is a romance, it's a love affair between a man and his wife. Husband and wife, man and woman. Romance is tough under those conditions because respect is tough also. Think about it. Romance is supposed to be between a man and his wife, but it's tough when the relationship, guys, is more like mother to son. It's tough. You know, we wonder, where does our romance go? I'm telling you, a lot of it's going down that tube right there. A lot of it. It's tough. She's told the Scriptures to respect you, but she's having a tough time. Because she's doing your stuff. Chances are she's not going to respect you. She's going to resent you for it. Here's how many young ones do we have here, those looking to be married. I'm going to give you a secret. The rest of you can just talk among yourselves. Secret of what drives the ladies wild. You want to know what that is? You know what it's not? Oh, he doesn't need to know, right? Many years left. What drives the ladies wild is not looks. It flies in the face of our culture, but you look around, there's a lot of pretty women marrying ugly men all the time. All the time. My deacons are an example of that, right? Sure enough. Of course, Greg and I, our wives obviously married us for our looks, but you know. Secret of what drives ladies wild is a man who can be respected, looked up to, who you feel protected and provided by, who assumes the moral weight of responsibility. That is an attractive man. He can have a wart on his nose bigger than Dallas, but I'm telling you, if he'll do those things, he will be an attractive man. It's the way the ladies are wired. They're wired that way. They're wired that way. Again, it won't matter what you look like and how good you did in football and all this other stuff and how well you've achieved at work, and you got the best looks in the world, if you're not assuming responsibility, it's going to be harder, at least, for her to be attracted to you. Again, secrets of marriage here. It's just simple stuff. Guys, in conclusion, we need to step up in love to lead our families. Assume responsibility. Assume it. Assume it. Carry the weight of it. Own it. Own it. It's our job. It's our model is Jesus Christ. It's who we're supposed to be. And how do we do it? Well, this is how we do it. You do whatever it takes for Jesus to provide for the church in the way that she needed, in order to elevate her, in order to nourish her and cherish her and take care of her, in order to assume the responsibility for her. He had to die for her. He is our example. So, with regards to your wife and family, in order to be the leader, you do whatever it takes. You're responsible. You know, the ultimate scripture, what Jesus said, the ultimate example of love is when we lay down our lives for our friends. You know, just to broaden the picture here real quickly before we close, you look at any relationship that we have, and you can point, if it's not going well, you can point in the middle of it and say, somebody's being selfish there. Somebody just wants their own stuff. Somebody just wants it their own way. Somebody's making sure that they get theirs in the circumstance. Are you a part of that? You may be in a relationship that way, and it may very well be the other person, but are you adding to that in any way? You see, the culture of Christianity and the heart of the Holy Spirit that works and lives and wants to live through you is one that says, listen, I'm not interested in myself. I'm interested in you. I'm interested in what's best for you. I'm interested in what's best for our relationship. I'm going to do whatever it takes. No secret in that. No rocket science. And yet we have culture. Our culture, our relationship culture is totally unraveling because we cannot get a grip on that one thing. We need to be like him in every way. I'm going to ask you if you bow your heads and close your eyes with me as we come to a conclusion.